And yeah, we have three speakers. And Sarah, would you like to say a few words about yourself and then start?
About myself? Okay. I currently work as a journalist, and I used to work full-time in health policy, and now I still do a bit of health policy, but most of my work is journalism. And I think Chekhov asked me to be here today just to give a sort of overview or contextual framework of why we have the system we have, which is what I'm going to try and do in 10 minutes. Not quite yet.
No.
Do you want me to talk now?
Yeah. Just
okay. Do I need to stand up, or are people happy if I sit down? Do I stand up? Can I stay sitting?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Awesome.
Okay, just to get a sense of how much information, how informed do people feel they are about health policy or health services as they are at the moment? If I was to ask, very informed, how many people would raise their hands? One. Okay, cool. How come? Okay, very good. And quite informed? Okay, and not informed at all, really. Bewildered. Okay. Say that again? It's shite. Okay. Okay. Well, I guess if I'm talking about stuff that you don't understand, feel free to go, hey, wait a minute, what's that? Baloney. What is it, 10 or 15? 10? 15?
What's on? 15.
Okay, will you tell me when I'm at 10? Because I tend to get carried away. Oh, there's a familiar face. Okay, I'm going to start from the point of arguing, which I could easily argue against, but I'm just going to put it out there, that I don't think we have a health system in crisis. And I think the public and the political discourse that we have this health system in crisis is quite unhelpful. I think there are very fundamental problems and flaws with the health system that we have. I think there are many pools of crises within it. But overall, in terms of the system as it was set up to function, flawed and all as it is, it works pretty well. And I say that on the basis that this week, hundreds of thousands of people access and use health and social care services, which are provided by hundreds of thousands of staff. And most of their experiences are pretty good. I'll give three quick examples. The first one is that there are tens or possibly hundreds of thousands of people who are still living in their homes rather than needing hospital or long-term care because they're being visited daily or every second day by public health nurses, by home helps, and by GPs. And that if you ask them of their experience with the health services, they might need more of it. And generally people would want longer amounts of time from these professionals, but they'd speak incredibly highly of their experience of care in their own homes. And the second very tangible example I give you is that if any of us walk out of here today and get knocked over by a bus, an ambulance will come and get us. They'll bring us to a hospital which have very well-trained staff, pretty good services, and our medical needs will be met. And we won't, it's not like America where you're asked, can you pay on your way in? You'll be asked a certain way into the system, but generally your medical needs will be met if required. And the third example I give is in relation to heart cardiac problems. And 10 years ago, a heart strategy was published. And since then, there's been huge investment in heart health. And just over the last few years, we're seeing a rise in life expectancy for Irish people in terms of how old we live. And one of the main contributing factors to that is the better heart health services, and that's mainly drugs and things like stents, which I don't really understand, from putting your heart, but the people are living longer and they're living healthier lives, and that most people can get access to these services. So I just put that out there, that for most of the people, most of the time, it works pretty well. Okay, so that's my starting point, which I could really argue against for and keep you here to tea time, but I'm just starting with that point. The second point I want to make is, and it's one that gets lost in the debate, and it's one that's argued against politically, particularly by the likes of Mary Harney and Charlie McCreevy, and that's this concept of the black hole of Irish healthcare, that we've been pouring hundreds of millions of euros into the health system, and it's still not working on what's gone on. And that's just fundamentally not true. In the 1990s, Irish healthcare was significantly underfunded. It was between, we were putting between 40 and 60% of the EU average at the time into the health system. At the moment, you can quibble over it, but we're still spending less than the EU average on health and social care. There's a whole load of reasons about that that I won't go into. So that we're making up for decades of underspend, but we're still not spending enough on public health care. And the third point I want to make is that, for me, the real fundamental flaw in the Irish health system is the fact that we have a two-tier health system. The fact that public patients have to wait longer to access diagnostics and, in some cases, treatment than private patients. So poorer people who get sick more often and die younger, it's harder for them to access what can be essential hospital care than people who can afford to pay. And currently in Ireland, over half the population have private health insurance. And it's not that all these people are very wealthy, but they buy it to ensure that they can skip the queue and access hospital care quicker than public patients. And again, I could keep you here to tea time explaining to you why that has why that situation came about, this two-tier health system. But we have it, and as far as I'm concerned, there's no excuse for it, that we could decide tomorrow to have a one-tier health system. But that has not been politically, and indeed publicly, acceptable to date. And I think Susie Long, and I don't know, would everyone be familiar with the story of Susie Long? More or less. Who came out very bravely and publicly last year because she had to wait 7 months for her cancer diagnosis when a private patient she was sitting beside only had to wait 3 days. And certainly for me, who's been banging on about this for about 15 years now, thinks that just in the last year, perhaps there is a bit of a tipping point in terms of public and political awareness that this two-tier system is not acceptable and needs to change. And then the other thing I was going to talk about was in relation to health policy. Like, what's going on? How can we have the system we have? Who's in charge? What direction it's going? And in 2001, the government published, with much fanfare, a new health strategy, which is called Quality and Fairness. And if you read it, it's actually a pretty good document. Now, it doesn't set about or lay out a way of deconstructing the two-tier health system. But apart from that fundamental flaw, it does commit to significant investment in a public health system. So more hospital beds, more beds in the community for older people, more community services, more primary care teams, more community mental health teams. Like, it's pretty good. It'd be hard, probably do it a bit better, but it was a pretty good document. But what's happened is, and actually I looked at it during the week, and most of the commitments were for 2007 or 2008. So if it had been implemented to what it committed to do, we'd have a very, very different system now than we had in 2001. But what happened since then is interesting. I think it tells why we've got to the point where we are now. There was a change in leadership, and I think that was significant, that Micheál Martin was the minister that drove the health strategy. But very quickly after the health strategy was published, he was given the nod from McCreevy that absolutely not would the finances be made available to implement it. So you can implement it, but we're not giving you any real extra money to do it. In 2004, then Mary Harney became Minister for Health, and I think that was a significant change in leadership. And there was also a change in leadership in the Department of Health. There was a new Secretary General, so the Secretary General who had pushed forward the health strategy was basically sacked over illegally charging older people for care, and a new Secretary General came in from the Department of Finance with a different head on him. And then in relation to the health services, I don't think anyone thought in 2001 that the way the health services were working then, with 11 boards and 13 independent hospitals, it was working well. Everyone agreed we needed a different type of system. And there's cities all over the world with populations bigger than this entire country who have one health service overseeing them. So through a long, torturous process, it was decided to introduce one health service executive, which is now the glorious HSE that we have. And when it was being set up, I think everyone, or most people, sort of agreed it was a good idea. And it was agreed because there'd be more consistent services across the country, because there was huge differences in how services were provided in Galway, as to Kerry, as to Donegal. So there'd be better consistency across the country. But also one of the key aims of the HSE was to devolve power locally, was to give much more say at local level to what happened your, or to how your health and social services were provided. And the other main aim was to provide a more accountable health service, so that people held responsibility, were responsible for decisions that were made. And really what we've seen since its establishment in 2005 is the complete opposite. We've got an overly centralised service, we've got this total confusion between the Department of Health and the HSE as to what's going on and who's responsible, and I think the Port Leash cancer crisis really highlighted that, that Mary Liney was saying she was accountable, and yet no one was responsible for the bad decisions that were made. These layers and layers of managers, anyone who works in it goes, you know, at least 5 years ago, I knew who I needed to go to get a decision made. Now there's different layers of management, and on top of that, the CEO has this sort of coterie of advisors who people really believe are the actual decision makers. And it's, I don't think anyone would say that it's working particularly well, but a huge amount of energy since the formation of the health strategy and publication has gone into setting up the HSE. And the other big area that of policy development, despite all the commitments, and pretty good commitments in the health strategy that have happened, is the increased privatisation of healthcare. So we always had a public-private mix of healthcare, but the private healthcare tended to be provided by church groups or voluntary organisations and wasn't for profit. And what we've seen since 2002 is the really institutionalising or incentivising of for-profit healthcare in the Irish health system. And that started with McCreevy introducing tax breaks in 2002 for private nursing homes and private hospitals. It was exacerbated by the setting up of this National Treatment Purchase Fund, which basically buys private care for public patients to get them off public waiting lists. But really what it does is diverts public money into private care. And then really the most obvious part of the privatisation is Mary Harman's plan to co-locate private hospitals on the grounds of public hospitals, which was introduced in 2005. So while there was this health strategy, which is not ideal, but pretty good, everything that's happened since then, or nothing that's happened since then, or very little that's happened since then, has been about implementing the health strategy. But it's about this huge administrative reform in the health services, in the formation of the HSE, and then this increased privatisation and really pushing the privatisation of healthcare, and also across a whole range of other areas like the privatising of care for older people, which only came to notice really when older people, when Lees Cross and older people were being abused in private homes. I guess, so where does that leave us today? I've got 5 minutes. I don't need 5 minutes. I've got to the end already. I just need to conclude, try and pull it all together. I had it earlier. I just hope I get there now. There's huge discontent with the health services that we have at the moment, and very, very legitimately, that people's day-to-day experiences, many people's day-to-day experiences of accessing A&E, of using health services, is very difficult. But really what's happened since the health strategy, in my opinion, is fundamentally flawed, because it's increased the two-tier health system by increasing privatisation, and it hasn't addressed that fundamental flaw, which is this inequality between public and private patients. And in a way, we can reform all we want the administration of the HSE, but unless we tackle that two-tier health system and create a one-tiered health system that's adequately funded, we're really just, to use that hackneyed expression, moving the deck chairs around the Titanic. And I think what the politicians, and in a way what the media have done very effectively, is take people's eye off that ball by crisis in the health service or high-profile cases. And I think what is necessary and perhaps is beginning to happen is this public and political awareness that really what we need to do is invest properly in the public health system and create an equal one-tier health system for everyone. Leave it at that.